listener-supported, volunteer-operated WFT
Folks, welcome to the December 12, 2009 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast live worldwide at WEFT.org. The views and opinions here expressed are those of the speakers that represent those of the Board of Directors, Associate Station Manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Thomas, some acknowledgments of some of our underwriters.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, BMWE, celebrates a voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who has some workers' interest news for us in this week's edition of the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's new poem for this week is entitled On the Rio de la Plata, and we'll hear it later on the hour. And it's a dedication, I guess, to Argentinian factory occupations, Tom?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
A few years back, but it's still in my mind.
Okay. Also here with us today is co-host Bob Plesney, our technical expert and advisor, who has some news and banner for us. And also joining us in the studio is co-member of our Labor Hour Collective, Bill Gorell. And we have two special guests today in the studio, Jermaine Light and Gene Vanderport, both of the Illinois National Education Association Teachers Union, who we'll be talking to later in the show. And we got an interesting topic today, which is the proposal for a progressive income tax in the state of Illinois. So stay tuned for that. And now we'll go to some labor news headlines.
Some 5,200 people are being recruited in East Central Illinois to work in conducting the 2010 census. Tests for the temporary jobs, most of which are part-time, are being conducted almost daily at locations throughout the area. The jobs will pay between $11.50 and $18.25 per hour. Most assignments available are for census takers and field operations. Most positions will run for 2 to 6 weeks with schedules for 20 to 40 hours per week, and the census work will be going on between now and June. Applicants must be at least 18 years old, have a valid Social Security number, and be able to pass a background check. Most of the jobs require U.S. citizenship, a driver's license, use of a vehicle, and the ability to go door-to-door to interview residents. Bilingual candidates, especially those proficient in Spanish and Chinese, are strongly encouraged to apply. All applicants must be able to speak, read, and write English. To apply for one of these jobs, testing schedules throughout Illinois are available by calling 1-866-861-2010. That number again, 1-866-861-2010.
Yeah, I've got a story here about workers asking for a fair deal now. Canadian and Brazilian workers at global mining company Vale are fighting for decent wages, conditions, and a fair deal. The IMF and ICEM are joining forces with the United Steelworkers in a global campaign to prevent Brazilian mining giant Vale from eroding working conditions and denying basic labor rights at Vale operations worldwide. 3,500 USW members in Sudbury and Port Colborne, Canada, have been on strike since July 13th after the company would only accept to renew their collective agreement if workers agreed to a drastic reduction in conditions and increased job insecurity. Despite having made $13.2 billion profit last year, Vale is insisting on creating a two-tiered pension plan, slashing the nickel bonus and seriously damaging seniority rights, while bringing in replacement workers to continue production. Vale workers face similar struggles in other parts of the world. In Brazil, workers are fighting for basic labor rights, a living wage, and minimum standards for safe working conditions. Dave?
Okay, Bob, that's a nickel. A nickel I mean, as in the money nickel or
nickel,
the mineral?
As in the mineral.
Oh, okay. I was going to say a nickel. They're going to rescind the nickel bonus? I mean,
it's a
give
nickel
me a break.
It's a nickel mine up there in Canada.
Okay. Well, that's great. That's good to hear. It seems like the steelworkers have been doing a lot of good international solidarity work lately.
Yeah.
I mean,
Leo Girard,
yes,
is the head. And,
he's really good on environmental issues, too. I mean,
yeah,
he's
been fairly active in a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the story I've got today is three nurses' unions merged on Monday to form the largest ever labor organization for U.S. medical professionals, which is expected to wield greater clout in collective bargaining and the national health care debate. Organizers said the new 150,000-member National Nurses United, comprising union locals from Maine to Hawaii, would use its strength to fight for patients' rights, higher health care standards, and better working conditions for nurses. Deborah Berger, president-elect of the NNU and head of its largest constituent union, the California Nurses Association, called the merger a big step. Quote, "It's a huge day, not only for the nursing profession, but also for our patients," she said. "We will be able to go to the halls of Congress and advocate for stronger patient protection, for better health care." The merger, approved unanimously by delegates at a founding convention in Phoenix, unifies the California Nurses Association, which actually has become the National Nurses Association, which has 83,000 members just in California, and several other states. The United American Nurses with 45,000 members, mostly in the Midwest, and the 22,000-member Massachusetts Nurses Association. Berger said the merger would likely lend powerful support for the most more progressive aims of the overhaul, but she said Obama's health care plan would not go far enough. What we've got now isn't really health care reform. It's a reshuffling of the deck chairs in the Titanic as far as our patients are concerned, and we're going to make sure that we have universal health care that is truly universal and has eliminated the insurance company, she told Reuters. Aside from a bigger voice in the healthcare debate, the merger is expected to give nurses greater leverage in collective bargaining after decades of growth in national hospital chains that have largely resisted union organizing.
A nearly five-decade-old holiday tradition will be returning to East Urbana this year when local residents of Grant Place and nearby streets initiate a lighting ceremony later on today to kick off the Candlestick Lane celebration of the holidays. The tradition dates back to 1963 when the original Illinois Power Company sponsored a lighting contest, which Grant Place won. Residents there used the $100 prize money to buy lighted candlestick ornaments for the front of each house on the street. Last year, there was no ceremony or celebration because participation by neighborhood residents had dwindled after several homes in the area changed owners. However, Candlestick Lane is back this year. Today's ceremony is set for 6 o'clock p.m. at the north end of Grant Place in Urbana. Several children will parade south on the street as part of the ceremony. One of the original Candlestick Lane participants reported that homes will be lighted from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. each evening through New Year's Day. In addition to Grant Place, lighted and decorated houses can also be seen on Fairlawn Drive and Eastern Avenue west of Cottage Grove.
Bob? Yeah, Dave, you mentioned environmental issues earlier, and as the world is leaders are gathering in Copenhagen this week and next, the Blue-Green Alliance and its partner organizations, which includes SEIU, will have a prominent delegation of labor and environmental leaders traveling to the meetings in Copenhagen. SEIU Executive Vice President Jerry Hudson and Occupation Health and Safety Director Bill Borwegen will be attending the international conference. The Blue-Green Alliance is organizing several events during the UN Climate Change Conference to highlight the job-creating potential of clean energy and how they are working to advance climate legislation in the U.S. And also attending is members from the coal miner workers, the United Mine Workers of America. As talks of curbing pollution increase, fossil fuel burning industries like coal are at the center of the discussion, and representatives from the United Mine Workers of America are in Copenhagen, where the stakes of a new climate framework are high. Any agreement will directly affect their livelihoods and the future of their industry. They are among the 40 other union members from the U.S. in Copenhagen as part of a 400-member working delegation spearheaded by the International Trade Union Confederation, according to the AFL-CIO. Dave?
Okay, Bob, this is from Harry Kelber in New York City, a person that we've interviewed on the air quite a few times. Harry's 95 years old, actually, and he's a veteran of World War II in the European theater. Organized labor has decided to be conspicuously silent about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, implying that the cost of the wars and casualties in money is not a subject for public discussion or comment within the AFL-CIO and Change to Win, or a major concern of America's working families. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka and each of the 51 members of the Executive Council had nothing to say about the 4,343 U.S. soldiers who gave their lives in Iraq and the 746 in Afghanistan, or to show some honor and respect for union members who were killed in action. Although the two wars have continued for 8 years, it was rare that any comment about them appeared on the AFL-CIO website at a time when the American people were anxiously watching day-by-day reports of the military situation. It seemed clear that the ban on any mention of the war was dictated by orders from the leadership. It is worth noting that most of the labor media, which should have played an educational role about the war, quickly fell into line with the unwritten taboo on war news. This is particularly true of two influential labor publications, Labor Notes and ILCA's Media Center. They failed to mention that a majority of Americans had become opposed to the war in Afghanistan because of its enormous costs and corrupt government. For 8 years, Congress gave President Bush a blank check to conduct the war in Iraq. We know what happened. Should we give the same blank check to President Obama? Tom?
The Pell Grant program for needy college students is facing a massive shortfall as the nation's bleak job markets drive people back to school. An administration official has said the program will cost $18 billion more than Congress and the White House had anticipated over the next 3 years. The official, who was not authorized to speak publicly about the budget, spoke on condition of anonymity. The official said that the administration is working with Congress to fill the gap and is committed to making sure the United States has an educated workforce. The shortfall is the largest in the history of the program, which cost the government about $18 billion last year.
Okay, I've got another news story here, of course. It says Americans want their government to create jobs through spending on public works, investments in alternative energy, or skills training for the jobless. This is according to a new poll taken by Bloomberg. They also want the deficit to come down, and most are ready to hand the bill to the wealthy. Even though almost 9 of 10 respondents also say they believe the middle class will have to make some financial sacrifices to achieve those goals, only a little more than one-fourth support an increase in taxes on the middle class. Fewer still back cuts in entitlement programs such as Social Security and Medicare or a new national consumption tax. These long-standing contradictions in voters' attitudes towards taxes, spending on a deficit, are intensified as the people... the U.S. grapples with the most severe economic crisis in decades, says J. Ann Seltzer, president of Seltzer & Company, a Des Moines, Iowa-based firm that conducted a nationwide poll survey. The rich have become an especially inviting target as the combination of a bank bailout and big bonuses stoke resentment, she says.
Yeah, Dave, this is Bill here. I'm just thinking that if we just went back to the future, back like in the movie to the days of Eisenhower, that maybe many of our... economic woes would be fixed if we go back to a 20-plus brackets, a much more fair way of doing it rather than the only five brackets we have now, and at least 50%, if not higher, on the top bracket.
Yes, and I think this will dovetail real nicely with our topic later on in the program today, too, because I think a lot of the history of what previously was the case as far as our tax structure is very relevant. Tom, do you have any other news items for today?
No, that Pell Grant was the last one.
Okay. I've got just real quickly here, I want to mention, and we'll go to Workers Independent News, about Bolivian President Evo Morales and his political party, the Movement Towards Socialism, won a resounding victory in the presidential election this past Sunday, December 6th. The nearest challengers, Manfred Reyes Vila and his running mate, Leopoldo Fernandez, whose current address is a La Paz prison, where he stands accused of ordering the murder of pro-government peasants, represent an old political and economic order that has used sedition and violence in an effort to obstruct and destabilize the Morales government. The old order and the new are locked in a struggle for the future of Bolivia, and the social movements are critical for the president's to be able to create a new alternative, declared Bolivian Foreign Minister David Choquechana in the tropical city of Copacabana. The dialogue between these parallel summits is in emblematic of the close association between social movements and the new left governments of Latin America and Bolivia. A broad-based coalition of movements with peasants, workers, and indigenous groups at the forefront was instrumental in defining Morales' program even before he was first elected to the presidency in 2005. With the support of the social movements, the administration succeeded in meeting these key goals in its first term, which were government control over the nation's oil and gas resources, two, the creation of a new constitution to be refound the Bolivian state, and the advance of agrarian reform. And it appears the right-wing opposition rooted in this control of large landed estates and petrocarbon resources in the eastern lowlands constitutes the main challenge to transforming property relations and creating a more equitable democratic society in Bolivia. Okay, we're going to go here to a little Workers Independent News, and then we'll be right back with Tom Thomas' poem of the week, and then we'll get right to our guests here to discuss progressive income tax in Illinois.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On International Human Rights Day Thursday, there were actions worldwide advocating for improved labor standards for domestic workers. Andrea Mercado is a domestic worker organizer with MUA in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Domestic workers are excluded from a lot of basic labor protections. They don't have the right to organize. They're excluded from any occupational safety and health regulations. Domestic workers in this country only won the right to a minimum wage in the 1970s.
Mercado says the domestic worker movement is a vibrant, growing movement. She says efforts are underway in New York and California and also at the national level to create good labor standards for domestic workers.
We have a National Domestic Worker Alliance, which we formed in 2007, which is doing really exciting work at the national level. We're looking to see if we can pass reforms in the Department of Labor. We have kind of new opportunities with the new administration to really advocate for domestic workers at a national level.
After an investigation conducted by the Department of Labor, workers for SSM Healthcare in St. Louis have been paid $1.7 million in back wages. According to the Labor Department, the medical corporation failed to provide nursing staff time and a half for working over a 40-hour work week. Even if employers are forced to skip a meal period or work a shorter meal period, the company's timekeeping software automatically deducted time. Seven hospitals fall under the SSM umbrella. The report discovered inaccuracies impacting 4,007 employees. The Fair Labor Standards Act requires employers to keep accurate time and payroll records. In New York City, the Kingsbridge Armory Redevelopment Alliance Thursday rejected Mayor Bloomberg's proposal to gain city council approval for a big development in the Bronx. The coalition of community labor and clergy wants living wage jobs guaranteed before that development is approved. Activists have been fighting for years to make sure that this redevelopment creates decent living wage jobs so the community as a whole benefits. Mayor Bloomberg wants to create a living wage fund, while the community coalition wants mandates on any employers involved in the project to pay at least $10 an hour plus benefits. The coalition says Bloomberg is New York's richest man, yet feels setting a minimum living wage of $10 an hour is too much to guarantee working people. City Council committee is expected to vote on the redevelopment proposal today with a full council vote soon. Here's today's economic report. Once the recession is over and workers feel secure, the job market is steady, a large number could be calling it quits. According to a recent study, 60% of respondents said they plan to leave their current job due to how they've been treated during the economic downturn. 21% said they're thinking about moving on. Many workers that leave would be seeking new positions at companies that respect the balance between work and a social life. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Okay, we're now at that portion of the program, the Illinois World Labor Hour Cultural Corner, with Tom Thomas's poem of the week on the Rio de la Plata.
Citizen soldiers they became when they had been pushed all too far. They would not be slaves of the game when they could reach a higher star. By the thousands, by justice armed, idling each major city, in unity the workers swarm, seeking justice over pity. They were not violent at all. Each of them had to just sit down. Workers answering justice's call, paralyzing many a town. They showed the fascist bosses that their land was theirs to have and hold. It was their land where each one sat and planned to stay, serene but bold. They sat until the bosses broke, and each ceded back what they stole. And loudly then true justice spoke as revolution won its goal. If we could all stand together like our South American friends, the fiercest storm we could weather, bringing our torments to their ends. The people of our own nation, should know that if we would be free, what we need is the application of unity from sea to sea. On the Rio de la Plata was written at the Poets' Loft in Champaign, Illinois, on December 5, 2009, and was first recited live December 12, 2009, on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I got some public service announcements here. Building and rebuilding the labor movement for workers combating neoliberalism at home and globally. A class for Champaign-Urbana area students, unionists, and workers with discussions, movies, and guest speakers. Sponsored by the University of Illinois Labor Education Program and the Champaign County Union Community Action Network. And co-sponsored by the Champaign County AFL-CIO, Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, UIUC Campus Labor Coalition, and Central Illinois Industrial Workers of the World. Classes are Thursday evenings from 6 to 8:30 a.m. from February 4th to March 18th at the Wagner Education Center, Room 43, School of Labor and Employment Relations, 504 East Armory Avenue in Champaign. For more information, contact Joe Berry at 217-333-2388. That's 217-333-2388. And another public service announcement here. We got a whole list of thanks to Jermaine Light, who brought us today about, since it's the holiday season, about support unions and buy union-made products. And Jermaine, did you get this off the AFL-CIO website?
Yes. Well, not off the website. It was an attachment sent out to the AFL-CIO delegates.
Okay. All right. And I guess some of the things that are mentioned here that are union products are unionjeanscompany.com sells union jeans, skirts, socks, and other clothes. Candy that's made in the U.S. is Godiva, Mars, Nestle, Beisch, Hershey, and Tootsie Roll. Going on here, banks, Amalgamated Bank. I don't think we got one of those in our area. As far as union hotels, you can check out unitehere.com. Union Delivery Services, United Parcel Service, and of course the United States Postal Service. And it says here, do not use FedEx. They are very anti-union. Cell phones, AT&T, formerly Singular. And bookstores is pals.com, but the one that definitely not used is Amazon. I've used Amazon here just in the recent past, so I'm glad of that information. Amazon, I guess, is extremely anti-union. They fired workers who have tried to unionize. One last public service announcement here. Labor's View TV, turning to our latest edition tomorrow at 4 p.m. We have Dave Powers, Dave P., on the air talking about his experiences in Argentina after the economic collapse there and workers' occupation. He brought a short 40-minute film that was done of a lot of the demonstrations. It's quite dramatic because, after the economic meltdown, you see these people that are dressed in middle-class clothing bashing in the windows of the local banks and destroying the ATMs wanting their money. I mean, it was just that dramatic. And then, of course, the subsequent street demonstrations, shutting down the cities, and then, of course, the factory occupations and stuff. So, tune in tomorrow, like every Sunday, from 4 to 5 p.m. For Labor's View. Okay, now we can go to our special guests who have were generous enough to come in today on a Saturday to talk about an issue that's, I think it's long overdue to talk about here, and that's the proposal for a progressive income tax in the state of Illinois. So I'd like to welcome Jermaine and Gene Vanderport. Jermaine Light and Gene Vanderport, thanks for coming to the show.
All right. Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah. Okay, Gene. So, it's interesting. I checked out some websites on this issue, and, of course, a lot of them, it's actually a lot of blog posts and everything, and you wouldn't believe some of the people ranting against a progressive income tax. Saying, we've got enough taxes in the state. Right. This is already a socialist state, if you could believe that. So let's start it off there.
Well, it could be that I live in a parallel universe. and it is true that people have a right to be angry about taxes, principally because so many of them are regressive, and therein lies the problem. But let me just kind of like paint the background picture here of why we think it's so important, particularly here in the General Motors of public education. Tom mentioned a little bit earlier about the problem with Pell Grants and funding for Pell Grants. It just really highlights the whole problem. Let me take you back 1 year. It's fall 2008. Right here in Champaign, a number of us were demonstrating against the bailout of Wall Street, and we wanted to bail out of Main Street. And one of the programmatic tenets of our movement has been universal, publicly financed, progressively financed, public education for all, pre-K, postdoc. It's an old notion. One has been shared by, you know, Democratic Socialist Green Party people, labor, progressive Democrats, and anybody who cares to look at the issue. Why can't we have in the United States what so many countries around the world have taken as a given, particularly in Western Europe and in South America? Our notion is, quite frankly, is that we socialize the cost of education. If we would really want to jumpstart the economy, there's no better investment. You would free people from tuition and other kinds of education debt, let alone make strides towards equity in the system as a whole. And again, the premise is if you can bail out bank thieves, why not jumpstart your economy? Well, let's fast forward to fall 2009. On the national scene, Obama continues to disappoint, unfortunately. Hope has given way to despair, however.
And disgust.
Well, yes, and, but I'm not without hope, because here's why. Look what we've seen just in the last several weeks. One of the most incredible strikes in the history of our community, the graduate employees.
Indeed.
Not only pulled it off with great acumen and probably one of the best organized, best delivered I've ever witnessed. But,
go GEO.
Okay. Yeah, and
pulled it off very quickly, too.
That's right. Of course, when you win, you're supposed to call it into the strike, and they won. But look what GEO is striking over: living wages for public education workers, health care costs being defrayed, and most importantly, the whole notion of tuition waivers. And the way they articulated demands was most interesting. It's not about us, it's about all of us. And that was the thing that gave me great, great hope. And then add to that the mass mobilizations of students. There's now a new student movement. Well, the thousands of students in California that mobilized and held regions hostage. What a great fun that must have been. And that continuing effort to deal with the fact that tuition costs are rising at the rate of 30% per year. And back here in Illinois, the success of students, among others, in getting the MAPS program back, which is a Pell Grant kind of concept. Add to that, Lo Collectiva's work just this week around the DREAM Act, you know, making it possible for the children of undocumented workers to get public education. Add all these things together, and you see where some things might be moving. So within that context of active struggle, there is now a whole new focus that we would like to look at. The Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, of which Jermaine and I are a part, and some of the people here are, the AFL-CIO, the Central Labor Body, and the Campus Coalition of Labor Unions, just to name a few, are part of a broad coalition called the Responsible Budget Coalition, one of the most broad-based coalitions we've seen in Illinois in years. Their purpose? Well, we got to come up with a revenue stream to make public education a universal right. The law that we want to bring onto the books isn't perfect, but it's a step. It would provide, at least in part, the revenue stream we're looking for. It's a daunting struggle, given the fact that Illinois has one of the most progressive tax systems in the country. And you're absolutely right. Most folks don't want to pay more taxes. Back in May, we're mobilizing to get then the Senate-passed version of this bill passed in the House.
Oh, Gene?
Yes.
I would think that perhaps your proposal, even though I haven't heard it, it might lower taxes for many, many people.
In fact, that's one of our notions as well. Jermaine will explain some of the ins and outs of this particular bill. It's roughly similar to House Bill 750, which was an effort a few years ago. It had a lot of traction, had a lot of public support, but had some difficulty with the Speaker of the House. What's new? Anyway, but here's what happened. When we tried to mobilize our members in May, they said, yes, we don't want our pensions cut. Yes, we need more money for wages. Yes, we need to defray health care costs, but don't raise my taxes. So it's incumbent upon us to go back with a message that says, okay, where's it going to come from? How do you want to make it happen? And really build a workers' movement for progressive tax policy. And that brings us to House Bill 174, and I'll let Jermaine talk a little bit about that.
Okay, well, first of all, Oliver Wendell Holmes said, taxes are the price we pay for civilization. So if we want services, we have to pay taxes. And that's really what it gets down to, is we don't have enough money for all the services that people want. And yet there was a poll recently in Illinois that showed that people's attitudes about the services that Illinois provides or should provide haven't really changed in 50 years. People are still expecting the same services like quality public education and health care and so forth. But they're not wanting to raise the taxes. You simply can't have one without the other. So, and also, the United States in general has one of the lowest overall tax rates of any country in the world. Did you know that? And Illinois, among the states of the United States, has one of the lowest rates of state income tax. So there's our problem. You can't just simply cut the taxes and expect to get the same services. So the problem for 2010 is that Illinois is facing an $8 to $11 billion budget deficit. Okay? So many things will have to be cut. Some experts are predicting maybe 18,000 teachers may have to be laid off, along with school programs and so forth, by the year 2011. So, this is what House Bill 174 would do. Okay, it would increase the individual income tax rate from 3% to 5%, and in a minute I'll tell you what that would do to a family of four. It would increase the corporate income tax rate from 4.8% to 5%. Not quite as big an increase as House Bill 750 would have done. Okay, it raises the standard exemption for individuals from $2,000 to $3,000. It raises credit for local property tax from 5 to 10% with a $1,500 cap. It increases the earned income tax credit from 5 to 15% and expands sales tax base to 39 previously exempt consumer services. So although it does increase overall 3 to 5%, for individuals, there are some, I guess you'd say, kickbacks, right? The kind of help exemptions that would help the especially the lower income people. So how this would affect us? Okay, I can give you one example here. Let's just say we have a family of four that has two adults and two dependents, and they have a very modest income, say $50,000 total for the family. So for that family, taxes would go up by about $790 without the exemptions. The standard exemptions, having been increased by House Bill 174, would then lower their increase to $730, so it would take it down $60. So if they did own property, and let's say that they paid $5,000 in property tax, then the change in the local property tax credit would further reduce their income tax increase down to $480. Okay? So, it all comes down to caffeine. And you know how that works? It works this way. A lot of us drink caffeine, mm-hmm. Okay, one way or another. Some of us may drink it at home. Others may go to McDonald's and get Coke. Please don't do that. It's anti-union. Get Pepsi instead. But don't go to McDonald's either. It's not good for you. But anyway, how many of us do, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay? So $480 a year amounts to 300 cups of coffee or Coke or other soda pop at McDonald's annually. Okay? It also amounts, if you have a slightly more of a champagne budget, it amounts to 125 lattes at Starbucks annually. So whatever your inclination for caffeine is, that just shows you what you need to cut out for this increased income tax, okay? So, but with that, we get services. So with House Bill 74, 33% of all new revenues that would be generated would go to the Common Public School Fund, pre-K through 12. 17% of the new revenues will go to the Higher Education Fund, which they dearly need some help. And the rest would go to the State General Revenue Fund for other human services and so forth. Okay,
currently, like you mentioned earlier, Gene, there's a 3% flat rate of tax,
right.
as mandated by the Illinois Constitution.
That's correct.
How would this bill affect that?
Well, for one thing, we do need a constitutional amendment at one point or
another. So, in other words, that has to be the first step?
No, it does not. I mean, the way we try to deal with it in the immediate, knowing full well it's going to be a rougher struggle to amend the Constitution.
Not to mention opening the door for all sorts of bad things.
Well, you
got to
be very careful. Yeah, we're not advocating a constitutional convention here, but just going after one amendment. And actually, Senator Mike Farix has authored that kind of legislation in the past. But what House Bill 174 does attempt to do is work in a degree of progressivity through the exemptions that Jermaine mentioned. Those are geared, obviously, to the lower economic groupings. So that's how we get at it. And the sales tax element in 174, sales taxes are progressive by their very nature. Mm-hmm. However, what's been identified here to be taxed, it's not been taxed before, is, you know, when Bill Gorell gets his nicely coiffed haircut over there, he might have to pay a little bit more for that. When Tom takes his animals to be groomed.
Oh, that'd be more like my family.
Okay, well, whatever you do over there, I mean, you might be paying some taxes on dog grooming. Uh-huh. For those of us who have excess furniture, which has not been my problem historically, there are those of us here who had that problem. Nonetheless, storage bins would be taxed. So, I mean, these are things that people in my neighborhood don't have a whole lot of stake in.
So the moral of this lesson, put Fido in the bathtub.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, it seems like what this does in effect, I mean, frankly, I would like to have seen, of course, and I'm sure you guys agree, is that it would be nicer to see a higher corporate tax rate.
Oh, no kidding.
You know, but it's amazing how, what we pay taxes on already that really hurt, you know, the poor and even the you know, middle class and lower middle classes. Taxes on utilities, which includes, you know, your power bill, your water bill, your phone bill, also on gasoline. Now, food isn't taxed at the highest rate it used to be, but it's still, I think, what, about 1%, if I'm not mistaken?
That depends on where you are.
Yeah. I mean, in Illinois.
In Illinois, generally.
Yeah. Okay. And clothing, of course. I mean, and, you know, it seems like this bill, though, as you mentioned right off the start, is that it's not perfect, but at least it would start to at least go in the right, in a good direction, in the sense that people with higher incomes will pay more, and then other things that will be taxed that previously haven't been or at a lower rate, it'll kind of spread it out to where you'll hardly notice it. I mean, come on. I mean, getting a cup of coffee, you pay a little more tax on it. Right. I mean, how much more is that going to be? You know, a nickel, a dime, maybe. Right. You know, at most.
And we don't forget that our efforts around this bill is to build a base of folks who understand taxes better, understand how you make them work for you, and obviously, what we want to build is a national movement that truly creates a progressive tax system in this country, not altogether different from what Teddy Roosevelt talked about at the turn of the century, for God's sake. So, I mean, this is not a new concept.
Mm-hmm.
Not new at all. And if you look at the tax rates during the halcyon days of the Eisenhower administration, of all things, those tax rates were much more progressive than they are today.
Yeah, in fact, I believe the upper income people that made the upper 10% of the income brackets in this country were taxed at 90% tax rate.
That's right. That's right.
And that
that's
corporate taxes at that time, actually up until the late 1970s, corporate taxes provided 40% of all local, state, and national revenues. Now it's less than 20%.
That's right. Yeah. And during that same period of time, from about 1945 to 1979, people's wages actually were keeping abreast. And then you got to the Reagan period, and with the
economy
died. Well, basically, it was killed. It was murdered. A combination of tax breaks for the rich
and more taxes on the poor. Because
more
I remember
taxes
it was
on the poor, and they increased payroll taxes,
and they started taxes on unemployment benefits for the first time.
That's right.
Yes, and that's going to really hurt me coming this spring because I'm not having them deducted out of my unemployment checks and. That's been about my today is the anniversary of me being laid off my last halfway steady construction job.
1 year?
A year. Yeah. I've had about 30 days work since then.
I tell you, I've been talking to plumbers, electricians, is the most
well,
people
Dave,
in the industry in the same boat.
If
you know?
We're not making foundations, what are they going to be doing next year?
That's right.
Well, there it is. And when you look know? When you look at what's going on around us and why we have to engage particularly students and young people, you know, look at the unemployment rate among high school graduates now. And when you account for issues like color, it's just so high, it boggles the mind.
And what's really shocking is college graduates have
college
a higher
graduate,
unemployment rate than high school graduates.
Right. Yeah, well, here's the way it is. I'm 53 years old. I've been a union member. This is my 30th year as a member of Local 703, and I never have gotten any of those stupid pins that they give us at particular meetings. But anyway, I've got a master's degree. In this society, I'm unemployable.
Right.
You know, who's going to hire me? You know, you're going to leave as soon as the construction comes up. Oh, you've been in a union this long. You're going to be a troublemaker. You've got that education, you know. And thing is, I can't get anybody to hire me for my master's degree. I can't either.
And then they think you're overqualified for a job, and hence, you know, that you'll leave when you find something better. So
these same lines, what the same coalitions that are working for this tax increase are also the same players working with very progressive tax and budget experts, particularly the Political Economy Group of Chicago, Center for the Materi Group, a number of people, Economic Policy Institute. They're looking at moving this whole progressive income tax and corporate tax issue to the center if we want a sustainable jobs program. Sustainable, green, unionizable jobs
that
are there tomorrow with a living wage, then you have to come up with the money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The money didn't disappear. All right, the bank bailout proved it didn't disappear.
The Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, that's right. Ralph Martier's group.
Right. Mm-hmm. They've proven how you can create this system of jobs, of job growth. It will not come the way that the administration's looking at it now, with a little bit of tinkering here, a little bit of tinkering there. Small business folks just cannot create that kind of job program.
Well, not to mention all of the corporations that have moved all their production facilities to China, to Mexico, and you know other places. I mean, and our government helping them do it. I mean, this is the real tragedy here. I mean, that's another big component of where we've lost a lot of the tax base and everything. I mean, you know, but the thing is that you know, people say, well, you know, if we raise corporate taxes, you know, they're gonna just pull up stakes and move somewhere else and everything.
They already have.
Exactly. Thank you, Bill. Yeah. And not only that, but it's like it's time to start making some laws. If they want to sell their products here, then they got to have us. Either, if not, I would like to see 100% of their production facilities here, but, you know, let's say at least 90%. Otherwise, they get hit with a stiff tariff.
Well, that's what happens with China whenever, like, Boeing or somebody tries to sell them a bunch of airplanes. Well, it's first thing they ask for is them to build another plant in China.
Exactly.
Something I wanted to get back to is the unfairness of the taxes in Illinois, and this is 2007, shares of family income for non-elderly taxpayers. And this is from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. And anyway, in the lowest 20th percentile, which is incomes less than $18,000, averaging $10,100 a year.
Whoa. Hmm.
Those people, when you combine sales, property, income taxes, and then you have the federal offset, which when you get wealthier is a boon to you, anyway, their total is they pay 13% of their income on all taxes.
Their meager income, and that's a big percent of a meager income.
Now we'll jump up to the middle 20th percent, which is $36,000 to $58,000, averaging $47,000 a year.
Is that households or individuals, by the way?
Shares of family income.
Household,
so that
okay.
would be household.
Okay.
In my case, it would be individual and mm-hmm. household.
Yes.
Anyway, the average there is $47,000 a year. Well, and I would say probably a lot of the listeners here in this group, we're paying 10.1% of our incomes in these taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now we'll jump up to the top 1%. That's $500,000 plus, averaging $2,084,700 a year.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying 4.1%.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, that's it, folks.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, it's just, it's totally reverse of what it should be, you know.
That's right. I mean, it just shows you how people have a flat tax rate in most systems in the real world is a very regressive taxation system, and I get so tired of explaining this to construction workers.
We're going to take a little quick musical break here. The song's from the 1930s called Bank Failures, but it also talks a lot about taxes, and we'll be right back.
We pay taxes for good roads, pay taxes on our schools, taxes for this, taxes for that, been working harder than mules. By skimping, we saved a few dollars, put them in a big bank vault. Something is wrong, cause that money is gone, and it certainly isn't our fault. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the use of working if we stay in debt? We gotta break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a load upset. Just why our money went bye-bye, nobody seems to explain. Times are hard, ain't it a shame? We gotta pay those taxes again. Our clothes are slouchy and ragged, our hearts are burdened with care. The failure of the national banks is nearly more than we can bear. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the use of working if we stay in debt? We gotta break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a load upset. If banks ain't safe for us people, why then allow them to run? Big iron balls can't open themselves. Folks, something's gotta be done. Our hard-earned money's gone bye-bye, gone in that big bank crash. We're in a mess, folks, a terrible mess. Can't get credit and we ain't got cash. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the use of working if we stay in debt? We gotta break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a load upset.
Okay, we're back. And so, Bill, Bill's here on his laptop all the time, and there's people constantly emailing and stuff as they're listening to the show. And, Bill, read this email you just got from where? The guy's down in Southern Illinois?
Yeah, first I'd like to say hi to Don and Jeff, and Neil, we'll be getting your story on here pretty soon. This is from a Facebook friend named James, someone I've never met who I really don't know. He's from our communication on here. He's appeared to be a fairly conservative guy, and he's listening on dial-up. And apparently he's from around Cairo. He mentions that in this message. And he says he wants to know why Southern Illinois is such a depressed area. Northern Illinois seems to prosper decade after decade. And apparently his police department had a car repossessed. And there's no balance for the poor in Illinois.
Sorry to hear that, though. But that's just unbelievable.
And that's something that you guys deal with all the time.
Right.
And it's basically because
we have
low state income tax.
Right.
And we have – and schools and police departments are financed by property taxes.
Well, there you hit it on the head. The taxation in this state is based on your zip code. And if you're in an area that's got loads of stuff, let's say something like a nuclear power plant, wealthy communities, $400,000,
$500,000. Like Hoffman Estates up in
garages.
Chicago. Yes, suburbs.
Those areas get the cream of everything, schools, roads, infrastructure. If you're in downstate where, Maytag's moved out, the mines are closed, the only thing you've got are non-tax-paying entities like Southern Illinois University, then you'll have East St. Louis. You'll have repossessed squad cars. and fire departments without enough hoses to get to the fire. I mean, that's the nature of taxation in this state. It's a regressive system. Property taxes should not be the main mechanism mm-hmm. by which you fund human services.
And it seems as if the poor are the ones shouldering most of this benefit. I should say the poor and the lower middle class, yep. and the wealthy are the ones that are basically almost getting a free ride.
Yep.
You know,
that's it.
Not to mention when they buy services and stuff, they can only eat so much food. They can only really consume so much gas. You know, the burden falls. You know, when you go out and buy necessities like food, clothing, gasoline, that kind of burden falls much heavier on the poor and the lower middle class than the wealthy. You know, so it's just.
Well,
it's a double whammy, if not triple. You throw the property tax equation into it.
The lowest quintile, 20% in Illinois, pays 7% of their income in sales taxes.
Just in sales taxes.
Sales and excise taxes. By the way, I don't even know what an excise tax.
Well, I was like, I think for the utilities and stuff, I believe.
Yeah, and
gasoline.
That's just the way it is. And it's the same way on a national scale. I remember back, this is like 1989, 1990. It used to be SANE, the anti-nuclear war people.
Right.
Anyway, they had a study done that on the federal level, which showed that states like Illinois, basically the northern industrial states, were financing the poor southern states. And that's one reason why you find so many military bases in the South. It's one way to transfer wealth from the North to the South. And we've got the same problem in Illinois that Gene was just talking about. We need a way to transfer wealth from the North to the South.
Yeah, and then there's a prison thing, too. I mean, that seems to be a new economic engine for some communities.
But you can't do that through property taxes because all you're doing is transferring wealth within that area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how come these income taxes would be important, because there's probably a lot more wealthy people that live in Chicago than there is in downstate Illinois.
You think?
the one thing that we want to leave with you folks today is this. This movement for progressive income tax cannot be done just by the leaders of the movement. And we're making, a rather unique effort to take the message to the workers in their lunchrooms, in their homes, in their communities. We're sponsoring forums across the area. Even Gifford's talking about having a forum on what this tax initiative really would mean to us. And until we get inside people's hearts and minds on this issue, it won't happen. But once it's there and people finally get it, then maybe we can generate the kind of power it's going to take to overcome. Let me tell you, if there's anything the capitalist class gets, it's this issue. That's why they control all the media on this, control our thinking on this issue. And they love these tea parties.
Mm-hmm.
They love the tea parties.
Okay, Gene, real quick, could you, Neil also wants us to mention the Prairie Hills District 144 in Markham?
Yes. Here's a situation. People say, oh, my God, these teachers are making so much money. Well, quite frankly, just take a good look at salaries in public education. What's happened in Markham, basically, is that those employer-based health care plans that all of a sudden we all want. When did that happen? Anyway, is actually eating up everybody's races to a point that they're going farther and farther behind. So they're on strike just to stay even, and that's what's happening out there nowadays.
Yeah, that's bad that they just have to stay on even. You know, nobody's getting anywhere. You always have to remember that a 3% raise is not a raise.
Not if you're – the average increases in health care premiums is about 13%.
Oh, wow. I was just talking about general inflation.
No. Inflation right now is flat, which is the good news. The bad news is the corpse has no pulse. it's still a problem for those of us who bargain that health care is still causing us to lose the game at the end.
Jermaine, you had a quote when we took a little musical break there about something about Adam Smith, who's always seems like he's taken out of context a lot, but often quoted by a lot of these pro-corporate talking heads, if you will. What did he have to say about that?
Well, and I don't have an exact quote from him, but he was, I guess he wrote a book about capitalism, and he was The Wealth of Nations.
Wealth of Nations, yes.
Thank you, Gene. And in that he explained, and he was very much a capitalist, and his book is considered a capitalist Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But he explained that if you tax, overtax the poor and middle-income people, that they won't have enough money to spend, and your economy will suffer and be very poor. And how can we ever come out of a recession if we're still doing that and doing it worse than we were, you know, 50 years ago?
Well, indeed. I mean, look at what happened in France right before the revolution. The poor and the small business owners, the peasants paid all the tax, and the wealthy and the clergy paid none. And, well, you saw a lot of people lost their heads over that one, if you will. Not that I'm advocating that. But anyway, okay, Gene Germain, thank you so much for coming into the show today. And, you know, we'll probably be revisiting this issue again here sometime in the future. So we're going to leave you with a little more music from the 1930s, which is kind of pertinent to this subject, Rich Man, Poor Man. And thank you for tuning in. Tune in next week for the Illinois World Labor Hour.
There's just two kinds of people, the sinner and the saint. There's one that gets and always got, while the other poor one ain't. Oh, the rich man drives his Lincoln past the red light with a grin, and the poor man follows right behind in his little hunk of tin. There's a motorcycle copper following up on that trail. Oh, the rich man tears his ticket, but the poor man goes to jail.